Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Dog, y'all. This is Brett, and this is it. My final show from home. Very impromptu conversation. Started as a private conversation, and then we agreed that it would turn into an episode of School Sucks Podcast and Anarchast, meaning my guest is longtime friend of the show, Jeff Berwick. He joins me today to have a very open conversation about some challenges that both of us have had. And since this is a conversation that's going to wind up not just at School Sucks, but also on Anarchast, I wanted to return to some of our core messages. It was 7 or 8 years ago where I talked about, you know, the spheres of control that we have and the importance of going to the innermost, the personal sphere of freedom, and starting there and doing as much work there possible before trying to project this message outward. And 8 years ago, to me anyway, that seemed like some pretty cutting edge shit. It's pretty standard messaging today on a lot of the self-improvement style podcasts. So I tried to, with Jeff, come up with some new ways of talking about that, applying some of the lessons learned and appreciating some of the opportunities created by finally being able to embrace that message in my own life. And, you know, it's an easy thing to say. It's a harder thing to practice. But Jeff and I have talked a bunch privately, and I think we both wanted to get this conversation on the record. So that's what we did today, and I hope you find it valuable. Just a couple of announcements. Like I said, I am leaving Sunday. It's not the first stop. I'm driving to Keene to kind of launch from Free Talk Live. That's going to be Sunday night. Me and one of my heroes, Mark Edge, doing the show, and we'll talk a little bit about what's coming up on the event. There is a schedule. It is posted on the website. You can see right in the main nav bar, there is an option called Tour. So you can see the outbound portion of the trip as it is planned so far. There's links to the Facebook events. There's a press release there. At this point, I do have to say, unfortunately, that I'm not going to be able to open or respond to any more emails related to the trip. The best way to communicate with me is through the School Sucks Facebook group. I certainly wish I could honor all of the requests that I've received. At this point, I think I just want to say, let's make this one great. I'll certainly learn a lot along the way, and there's no reason I wouldn't do something like this again. Like I talked about, I think, in the last show, I'm already planning a future trip to Minnesota. I did the same thing in the last show. I don't care. Wait till I get to Pittsburgh. You're going to find me very annoying while I'm there. I'm going to do the whole podcast in Pittsburghese. Same thing probably in Chicago, and wait till we get down south. Yeehaw. Anyway, the places where there's events on the schedule versus the places where there's not events on the schedule, at least on the outbound trip, that's pretty set. I would like to have a day here and there in between events to recenter. You know, that's a thing that people say. Making sure that I'm staying up on the routines that are important to me. putting out podcasts, editing videos, and some things you wouldn't think about, like doing laundry in a laundromat. You know, I don't know how many pairs of socks you have, Richie Rich, but there's going to be at least a laundry stop or two along the way for me. So I just want to say one more time, I really am appreciative of and grateful for all of the interest, enthusiasm, and support. The car is packed. I've got new tires on it. I just had a tune-up. I'm having my car guy do a final look over. What's in the trunk, you ask? A beautiful six-person tent, a two-person sleeping bag, but only for me, you know, so I can kind of spread eagle a little bit. That's how I like to sleep. All additional fluids in case I need to top anything off, jumper cables. I also have a hat and a scarf and gloves and winter boots in case I get into some kind of weird situation in the mountains. A pair of rollerblades. Yeah, I rollerblade. So I'm really excited here. And I just want to say thank you so much to the people who support this show. I really hope I can turn out a great product for you over the course of the next month. And to everyone, thank you so much for listening. Here is my conversation with Jeff Berwick. You're going to join it, already in progress. Here we go.
We've kind of both been going through similar sort of things from what I can tell. One of the things that we were talking about is how you're going on this tour and how you've been actually working to be able to go on this tour the same sort of way that I have. As people who've watched my personal podcast know on YouTube, it's just under Jeff Berwick, know that I do my walk and talks with my dogs, and I talk about how I was having trouble going on trips because I'd always get really depressed and then I'd start drinking and then I'd end up back in this really dark place and I'd end up coming home just really, just kind of a wreck. And I said a few months ago, I said, I'm going to get to the point where I can actually go on these trips and feel really good. And I just came back from one where I was in Colorado and then London and then Monaco and then Greece, all no problem. And so I've really got myself into a great space, and it sounds like you have too. So why don't you take us down that path?
Sure. And, you know, we might have taken different paths to get there, and some of our conclusions as far as what's best for each one of us, probably different. You know, drinking is a huge part of my story. I don't drink at all anymore just because I got tired of that experimentation of trying to find the right balance. But I think I was attempting to quit drinking for like 15 years before I finally gave it up. And back in the old days, when I was a young man, when I first started, I was like 21 years old. And if you want to quit drinking, where do you go? You go to AA, you know, and there's all these old timers there that say, hey, kid, look, you either come here or you're going to die, you know? And I was like, well, that sucks because, you know, life definitely beats the alternative, but I don't really enjoy, you know, your attitude towards life or general disposition, but I guess this is the way it's going to be. I mean, that's how my life was when it was. So I felt like I was really between a rock and a hard place when I was like 21 years old. And, you know, just all the access to information, people are lining up on the internet to help people in our situations or other situations pretty much for free. You know, there's certainly a lot of good products and good services, and therapy is great for this. But I was able to arm myself with information at age 35 that just did not exist or wasn't available by any easy means when I was 21, when I first started to address some problems with myself. And, you know, as a consequence, I mean, you know, part of it was my own unwillingness. You know, it was very personal. But as a consequence of not having the knowledge, it took me a long time to get for myself the kind of, you know, help that I needed. But once I did, you know, I found this program, Smart Recovery, which is more rationally based. AA, they say it's not religious, but go to a meeting and decide for yourself what it is. A lot of negativity there just really wasn't for me. So I was able to, through the age of information, find my own path. Over the last few years, it's really been successful, and I'm about to do something that, you know, 5 years ago would have absolutely terrified me, and I would have said, oh, that's ridiculous. Now, today, it terrifies me, you know, for many reasons. Traveling across the United States to cities like Chicago and Detroit, and, you know, being in my car and being out in the wilderness. But I feel like it's really, you know, a life experience that I need to have. It's a challenge, you know, I need to take on. And I'm hoping that there'll be some growth from it. You know, I'm doing it because it is a logistical nightmare. It is very overwhelming. But I think it's really the next step for me. And it's really important for me to go out and connect with, you know, so many people who have, you know, given me their time and attention for 8 years now with School Sucks Podcast. So that's, you know, the purpose of the tour, in addition to the personal challenge and the sightseeing is to go interact with my listeners, people who have great stories about self-education, home education, if they're parents, freeing themselves from government schools, recovering from, you know, whatever the college experience was for them. I want to get all these stories on the record and broadcast them to thousands of new people through the packaging of it in this event or this tour.
That's great. It sounds very similar to me in that you are kind of excited about doing all these things again. You've got all these things you're doing. That's sort of the same as me. A couple of years ago, I was getting so bad and so depressed that I couldn't even get out of bed. And now it's like, you know, this is my office where I work here, and you can see the view in the background. I used to have these blinds completely closed 24 hours a day. I didn't want to see the sun. I wanted to stay in bed. Everything was so dark. And you know, that's my story. I don't know if it's the same as yours, but I eventually got out of all of that. And it's just my creativity has gone through the roof. My interest in doing things. I'm so excited about doing things, which I've never been. I don't think of my entire adult life. Like I looking back on it, I think I've been depressed for a long time, at least 20 years or pretty close to 20 years at least. And I didn't even realize it until a couple of years ago. So, you know, and like you kind of pointed out, there's not a lot of help out there that's really obvious to a lot of people. And you pointed out this AA thing. I was the same thing as you. And I definitely drank way, way too much. And I would get really drunk a lot when I was really depressed and just sort of lose things. But I always looked at AA and I'm like, I don't want to sit there and mope around with a bunch of people. It's like, and the great thing that I've found is, since I've basically got it completely under control, like absolutely 100%, like I'm so amazed. Like, it's just like, it's amazing how you can get to that point at some point. I don't know if you ever can or ever will or whatever that is, but I have gotten there. And like, it's like, I want to talk about it almost every day. What a great thrill it is to not drink much anymore or hardly drink at all anymore. It's like, it's so much better in every way. And, you know, looking back on, you know, it just really kind of just dumbs you down and kind of, you know, I think what it really does for a lot of people is sort of numbs you quite a bit. And that's what I was definitely using it a lot for. And it also allowed me to be more outgoing in social situations. But what I realized was alcohol was not the answer. So for people out there who are kind of shy and they're like, oh, maybe I'll drink and go out, it's like, no, just work on yourself, figure out a way. And there's people like Sasha Daygame who's got great courses for helping you to get out of your shell and get out there and speak to people. Don't use that crutch, because that crutch gets really bad after a while. That crutch generally owns you after a while, right?
Sure, absolutely. You know, there's all these dystopian science fiction books, like Brave New World comes to mind. And there's this, you see this recurring theme where it's like, make sure the plebs are nice and doped up, right? And it doesn't just have to even be alcohol and drugs. It's distraction that, you know, the online world provides if we don't discipline ourselves properly. These can really get in the way of, you know, the achievement of personal freedom. And, you know, my message, it took me a really long time to embrace it for myself, but, you know, I was great at giving this advice to other people 8 years ago when my show began. Like, you know, think about freedom as all of these concentric circles with yourself in the middle. When people learn about, you know, libertarianism or anarchism, the first place they want to jump to is, you know, get Ron Paul elected president and the Federal Reserve, which is going to produce in most people a feeling of, you know, powerlessness, and it's going to lead to fatigue and burnout. You know, and I said to the audience, and eventually embraced it myself, go inward, go many, many circles in, you know, start with yourself and then your relationships and then your community. And then once you build strength in those inner circles where you actually have some control, maybe then you can extend your efforts to some kind of larger vision of the country or the future or the state of freedom. But we see so much of this in political activism. People almost use it as a kind of distraction, right? Or as a kind of explanation for their own failures. I probably said it that, you know, part of my problem is the government. Or if I had a problem, definitely in the early days of my libertarianism, I would say, okay, I have this problem. And then I would start like reverse engineering it until I found the state, you know? And we see so much of this like on the left today with all the self-victimization. But from my experience, personally and socially, there's a lot of people in the liberty movement who can fall into that kind of thinking too. And it's just a really important thing to be conscious of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'll kind of see, you're planning on coming down to speak at Anarchapoca 2018. And I hope you make it down here after your School Sucks world tour there. But that's a big part of what we've been talking about. It's something I've been talking about on this podcast for a while, is that I realized as well, if you go back to episodes 1 through 30 or 1 through 50 of Anarchast, we're now nearly 400. It was a lot of just slamming the government. There was no self-introspection about ourselves or how we should change our lives. It was just the government is horrible. And of course it is. But I found, and this is a friend of mine, Luke Rudesky of We Are Change, he always uses the tagline, be the change you want to see in the world. And I found that once I started to change, actually all my circumstances and everything around me started to change. You really affect all that. And in many ways, you create your own reality. And you can talk about how that all works or whatever. It gets kind of complicated and even sort of hippie-ish at some point. But you really do. And I've seen that myself. So I've made this effort to change myself dramatically in the last 2 years, and I've really accomplished a lot of it. It's never going to end, but I never even thought I would get this far. I really didn't even think this was possible. I feel like I'm on ecstasy almost every day now. That's how good, like, I feel unbelievable. I just didn't even know you could even feel like this, and it's through all the things I've been doing. But once I started to make the changes, and once those changes really started to show, it's like everything around my life just all of a sudden got better. I don't know what it was or how it is, but all the problems I used to have just seemed to go away. My family life got so much better. My wife, of course, at one point, she was probably looking at me going, this isn't the guy I married. He's sitting in his room in bed all day. He's just like moping around. Where's this, strong, passionate man that she originally kind of met, not too much, but at least a lot more than I was, because I got worse and worse over the years. And that changed, and now my family life is unbelievable, and now I can go on these trips, as I pointed out, and I'm really hoping your trip goes really well, because it's awesome once you can get out there again with your sort of new self and really, bring all these things into existence, into reality, like you're planning to do with your trip, which you wouldn't have done if you hadn't improved yourself first, right?
Absolutely. If I was going to explain how attitude affects reality, like to a young person, I certainly wouldn't give them, a documentary like The Secret, where there's all these fruity people in beaded jewelry. But I would, my simplest explanation would be, the world out there is kind of, a screen, and your mind is very much a kind of projector. And what's in that projector determines what appears on the screen. And I don't think there's anything necessarily woo-woo about that. I have lots of practical stories. Like, I used to have people who worked for me when I was a teacher. They were paraeducators, and all they did was come into work and complain about how they had everything from bad dreams to they don't feel well to their neck hurts. They had a crappy day. And then bad things would happen to them at work all day. And I knew that because they'd come and tell me about all the bad things that would happen to them. So I'm like, what are you cursed? And it's not that. It's where you point your attention. And they felt very comfortable feeling miserable and being negative. And that's where they pointed their attention. Now, I think, depression or alcoholism or whatever, however you want to refer to those things, that's a different kind of thing. But it does definitely darken the mind. It almost shuts the projector off. Like, you talk about, you've got that beautiful view of the bay behind you and pulling the blind shut. It's an interesting kind of metaphor for what happens in the mind. When you're drowning in drugs and alcohol or some other form of addiction, you don't even really get to see the world. You're certainly not available for other people because you're so, in like damage control in your own mind. And you need so much empathy and attention for yourself that you don't really have any to distribute anywhere else. So I think when you talk about making these changes and things changing around you, it has a lot to do with the availability, the resourcefulness that you start to have for other people. One of my first attempts to make this public on my show was in 2013. And I did a series based on David Allen's productivity book, Getting Things Done, and how I was integrating it into my life to give myself more control over what was going on in my mind, and also more present moment awareness with the people that I cared about. I would find that I would be in situations with other people and they'd be talking about something and trying to have my attention, trying to have me present. And because I was so disorganized in my own mind, I couldn't, give them attention or consideration when they needed it because I was so distracted. I mean, addiction makes that many times worse.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up so many great points about how you affect the things around you. And for, you know, anarchists, libertarians, voluntarists out there, a lot of them, I've seen this changing though. And when you come to Anarchapoki, you'll see it's like a lot of people are really waking up to the importance of all this. Again, a lot of sort of the anarchists, especially just in the old days, just very angry, very upset, very depressed, drinking a lot and all that kind of stuff. And that's sort of what the system wants you to do. It wants you to feel that oppression. It wants you to bring your energy level down, your vibration, you could say, your energy down, and get you into things like alcohol, which is a depressant, which just brings you even further down. And then what's going to happen? You're not going to go out there and affect the world and use that projector in your mind to create the world that you want, which you actually can do. It's quite unbelievable once you start realizing all this stuff. You can change the world dramatically, not just in a small way, dramatically, just by being the best version of yourself on the best energy level, the highest level. And for example, just the fact that you're going on this tour is just an example that you're going to affect, I'm sure, a lot of lives, meeting people in person. They're going to get excited. They're going to go out and make videos, or they're going to go out and start a business that will be helping people with learning or whatever it's going to be. That thing's going to branch off into so many things, but it would never have happened if you never got out of sort of where you were.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was just like, it was the beginning, end of August, beginning of September. I went through this period for 2 weeks of just like this deep despondence, like all of this input that I've been getting from the outside world through Facebook, through Twitter, through YouTube, through watching television. It's just like Trump, Charlottesville, CNN, Google, you know, like all of the YouTube demonetizing people. I mean, I'm forgetting 1,000 things that were injected into my brain. And I started to feel really powerless. And I started to feel like, you know, the thing that I was warning about almost 10 years ago on my show, I started to feel powerless. And I started to feel like, you know, all this work that I do, I mean, look at the world that I'm trying to project these ideas into. Like, what's the point? And, you know, I realized that I could either continue to allow my attention to get sucked into these things. And I think it is a matter of like living consciously here, where you do need to kind of tune into what's happening in the world, but you can't let it consume you. Or I'm talking definitely about me, right? Like, this is a problem that I've had for sure. So I'm trying to find that balance. I think lifestyle balance is really important, but attention balance is really important as well, where my energy is not getting sucked into these things over which, of course, I have no control. And then all I can do is, you know, research them a little bit, take them to the microphone, produce a podcast about it where I sound completely hysterical and outraged. And then no one cares about the thing that I was, you know, freaking out about 4 months later. Or what I could do is I could shift my attention into the positive. I'm really honored that so many people consider the message of School Sucks podcast to be impactful, that people have taken their kids out of school, that people have, you know, changed their minds about going to college, that people have gotten serious about self-education, and they've used our website to get some of the tools to do that, to not just improve their minds, but improve their lifestyle. Like, I started the show to bitch about, you know, school and political things that I didn't like. And, you know, it really, I'm happy with how it evolved. The community was a huge part of that over the last 8 years. And instead of sitting at home in front of the computer, in front of my phone, being angry about Charlottesville or angry about Trump or angry about the left or angry about what's going on in higher education, I can go into my sphere of control, which is the people who listen to this show, and I can focus my attention there in a deep way for 6 weeks almost, you know, 40 days. And that just seemed like a much better use of my energy and a much better use of my time than what I had been doing that kind of led me into this very temporary but rather dark place a little over a month ago. I knew something needed to change. I was in a comfort zone. And in that comfort zone, I was kind of sedentary and I was just letting myself be overwhelmed by, you know, all this stuff that I have no power over. So I wanted to change my focus. That's a big reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, in some ways you kind of have to go through these things too, to kind of have this newfound sort of appreciation for everything. So a lot of people say that to me, like, oh man, it sounds like you went through a rough few years there. It's like, yeah, I did. And thankfully I did, because now I've had to change so much because I realized I don't want to be in that place, that it's made me into this new person who's so much, you know, I don't want to like talk like I'm bragging or anything, but I'm so much better that in every facet of everything now than I ever was in the past, because I had to learn so much. And I was pushed so far down that, you know, you have to just sort of end it or get better. It's one or the other. And obviously I'm still here. So I decided to get better, and I did everything possible, and I did. And talking about how you can change the world a little bit more, it's, you know, I like that sort of that saying about how a candle can light up a dark room, or even a dark thing, you know, bigger than a room. Whereas darkness, when you bring it into a room full of light, it doesn't make the room dark. And that's the amazing thing about all this stuff, is that it really doesn't take like millions or billions of people to all catch on to all this stuff right away. Because all you need is that one point of light, and that will illuminate so many things, and it illuminates the world. It really does. And I've seen it personally in my own life so many times now that I know it's true. And I'm sure you've probably seen as well. You brought up how your podcast has changed, and how even your own community has helped you, and now you're helping them again. And this is sort of like feedback loop, and now it's going in all positive directions, which is amazing. And even Larkin Rose has said a few times, he's sort of like into math and stuff like that. He said, you know, if we had, I forget the exact numbers, but he said, if we have 10 or 20,000 true anarchist libertarian voluntarists today, and we all tell three people every year for the next 10 years about voluntarism, that will actually be, everyone in the world will have at least heard about voluntarism or become voluntarist within 10 years, or it's even less than that. That's the math of compound sort of interest sort of a thing. And that's the thing, that's what I think they know, is they want to keep us down. They want us feeling depressed. And so you brought up a lot of things about, you know, these false flag attacks or whatever they are, hoaxes, or even if they are real sometimes, but very rarely are they. But if they are, and then you have things like Trump, he's always, I go to the US and I see what's on the television, I'm like, I can't even watch for more than a few minutes. Right. I'm like, how can people watch this? It's like, my heart starts racing. It's like, oh my God, the world's going to end. You turn it off and you look outside the window and there's a bird and it's like, chirp.
Yep.
And you're like, wait, everything's fine. But you can get drawn into that. They want people to get drawn into that. And you brought up the alphabet agencies and things like Google. They want everyone to think that they're on the verge of being completely and totally enslaved. And in some ways they are, but it's not as bad as it really is. They want people to feel that, because that will drive them further down. They'll get into that sort of state that we've been in for a while. Then they'll just get further down, and then there'll be no chance of anyone doing anything to light up the room to change the world anymore.
Right, absolutely. You're talking about this candle, right? And this small candle that lights up the room. You know, I was really influenced in the early days by like Stefan Molyneux specifically. And Steph used to talk in these really grandiose ways about saving the world, saving humanity. And I don't mind that he did it, because it was motivational and inspirational at the time. But I think it created a little confusion about what it was possible for me to do in my life, right? So I'd light the candle, and then I would look around the room and be like, is light going to get over there? How bright is it in that corner? And eventually I realized, you know, my only job is to keep the candle lit. And if I can keep the candle lit and I can keep, you know, the candle bright, other people will make sure the light gets where it needs to go. I mean, that's what I've learned. The amount of generosity and enthusiasm that I've encountered from the people who listen to my show and support my show is just so really, really heartwarming. And the last month has been just a tremendous example of that. So again, it's that same theme that we talked about earlier. Light the candle and do, you know, the things that are necessary to keeping it burning, you know, and that's about as far as my influence can go, you know. So I really tried to focus on myself and be the best example that I can be. And when I feel like I fall short, I certainly bring in, you know, people to be guests on the show who I think are great examples, people who are really successful entrepreneurs, or people who, you know, have great lifestyle businesses, or you know, really on the ball about health, or people who have a lot of valuable things to say about psychology. I know when I need to like go out and bring the experts in, but I'm learning from that too. And I think it's a really important thing to do to keep that conversation going.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of like this big feedback loop, as we've been talking about. And as you get stuff out there, stuff comes back to you as well. And in so many different ways. And you know, it's just the energy of everything. It's quite amazing. Like I've in the last week, even like every week, I'm almost getting like new epiphanies and new, I'm just going like, and like, I see just like things developing in front of me that it can't be just like coincidence. Like I'm actually affecting all these things. And now that I've got my energy to a certain level, all these amazing things are just coming. And it's sort of like when I was in my really dark days where I was very low energy, all the bad stuff would come. It's like energy attracts energy or something. And you are, like you say, you kind of create your own reality, and we can get into the, you know, how that all works or whatever. Right. But you kind of do. And I remember my wife even coming in once when I was really down, and she said, "You got to get out of this." And I kind of said, you know, why, you know, that's kind of basically where I was at. Like, why, what's the point? And, she was like, "Don't you see you have really low energy? You're going to attract nothing but bad things right now." And it was totally true. It was like almost every day a horrible thing would happen. Like nothing like life and death, but like really bad things with the business. Like, oh, this all fell apart, that fell apart. It's like, you know, because I was in that state. But when you get your vibration up, your energy up, your, you know, that sort of a thing, and it's all positive. And I know some people might be watching this and saying, "Oh, it's BS, you bunch of hippies," or whatever. It's true. I don't know how you explain it, but it's totally 100% true in my experience.
Well, I mean, it starts with, you know, a willingness to kind of confront what's there. I am interested in asking you some questions about how this really took off for you or how this change occurred. But, you know, one of the most valuable books that I read was this objectivist, Nathaniel Brandon, who you've probably heard of, and he wrote this book called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. Well, you know, self-esteem, as far as a movement was concerned in the early 70s, it was this real new agey kind of surrender, just accept what is. It's, you know, kind of a useful thing, almost like drinking and drugs would be a useful thing to the power structure, right? Just, hey, man, accept it, you know, and just be happy with how things are and be happy with how you are. Even if you suck, it's fine to suck. And we see like a resurgence of that today in a slightly different form with the millennial generation. And that's something that I've really been upset about. But the six pillars of self-esteem started with living consciously, right? So, I mean, that is the willingness to face what's there, to see what there is to see. The second pillar was self-acceptance. But self-acceptance isn't where it ends. You know, you have to take responsibility for what's happening in your life, and then assert yourself, discover a purpose, and act with integrity. And those six things together, those are actions that you take, right? So you're not taking any of those actions if you're lying on the couch, or if you're lying in a bed, or if you're sheltering yourself from the world. But when you take that first step to say, okay, I am going to live consciously, I am going to bravely face what is out there, and most importantly, what is in here, then you're setting yourself up to go through those other five steps, those other five practices. And, you know, I found that to be just one of the most useful strategies for self-improvement that I've ever encountered in my life. But what was the turning point for you and the first steps out of the dark place you felt like you were in?
Oh man, that's going back about 2 years now. So for people out there who are maybe depressed or whatever, or have problems, and that's probably almost everybody, and are wondering, oh, did he just change overnight? No, it was basically 2 years. But one of the first things I did, and this isn't for everybody, I don't recommend that everyone just rush out and do this, but it really helped me, was I tried some psychedelics, because I'm the kind of person who, I like to, if I'm going to try something, I want to go all the way. I'm like never like, oh, let's just take it a step at a time. I'm like, no, I want to fix this. Let's do what's the most extreme possible. That's what I've done throughout my life. And it's actually usually worked out quite well. So I started off with doing some ayahuasca. And that got me, the reason it helped was I was so locked in my own mind and I couldn't get outside of it. And it was just nothing but negativity and bad things in there, that I needed something to just crack me over the head to just like take me out of that space. And that's kind of what I used alcohol for many, many years, because for a period of time, I'd forget how depressed I was. I'd feel kind of like I was having a good time. And I wouldn't think too much about all the crappy feelings in my head. But obviously that just goes down and down and down over time. But the ayahuasca just sort of like cracked me over the head. And it wasn't like I left the next day and everything changed, but it put me onto a path of, okay, there is a different things I can do here that are kind of helpful, that's good. And it kind of gave me a breather from this horrible, just day after day of just, you know, almost suicidal tendency sort of a thing. Not quite that bad, but pretty close to it. And then I went on and I did, after that, I did something called a boga, and that's super hardcore. It's like 2 days of all that kind of stuff. But that really actually...
That was like in a clinic?
I did that in Mexico, a place called, what's the name of it? Anyway, if you look it up, it's in Tepozitlan. It's a boga clinic with Barry Rosenoff, who's a past anarchist guest. I interviewed him afterwards because it helped me so much. It actually got me stopping drinking that day, and I didn't drink for months afterwards. And then I slipped back into it. That's a whole other part of the story. But it gave me that reprieve where I could get away from that and actually felt really good. Like I literally the next day felt similar to how I feel now, but actually I feel way, way, way better now. But I had never even experienced a day for so long where I felt good that it was amazing to me. And so I had this like weeks or months of I feel good and I don't need to drink. I don't need to do all these other things. And I can open these blinds and I like how beautiful it is outside and all this kind of stuff. It kind of got me out of it. I fell back into it over time, but not as bad. Like it's always like a two steps forward, one step backwards sort of a thing.
Sure.
For the last 2 years.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So it's been that way with every single thing I've done. So it's like I make this great breakthrough and then you have a step back. And what I've actually learned, and I've talked about this in my walk and talk videos, is that I actually don't beat myself up at all if I have a step back anymore, because one, I think it's actually kind of necessary for some reason. And I'm not saying that like, oh, give yourself a break, go back and have a step back. But I think it actually, you have to kind of do that for some weird reason. There's something to it. Maybe to remind yourself of why you're doing it, right? Because when you have that step back, you go, oh, I remember how bad that felt. Now I got to focus extra hard on making sure I don't do that again. I also learned so many things just about, you know, psychology or mental health and all these sort of things, that beating myself up over it was really bad. Like it would just put me back into that negative state. Whereas in the last few months, when I have had a step back, I go, well, I had a step back. Let's keep going. You know, like I don't even think about it. Like I don't beat myself up over it. Whereas like 2 years ago, I would have spent a week thinking about what a crappy person I am, what an idiot, how pathetic I was, how can I not do this? Am I not strong enough? Blah, 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 blah. But I've learned through years of doing this now that like that will just bring you back down, but you're going to have the step back. So, you know, no one's perfect. And in some ways, those step backs, as I pointed out, could be helpful. So you can use them as a positive. You can go, okay, remember how you felt today, how crappy that felt. Cause I went back and I had like 5 drinks last night or something. And remember how crappy you felt in the morning. Remember how crappy that was for years and years and years. Don't do that again, but don't beat yourself up over it. It happened. It's fine. Now let's continue on and get better. And so I've gone through that. And then I got into, man, I could list off hundreds of things. I've got like all my herbs here. Like I found out, basically, to keep it a little bit brief, I found out that really to get your mental health better, which improves your spiritual health, you really need to get your physical health better. And I was at a point where I was drinking quite a bit. And because of that, eating a lot of crappy food, because after you drink that stuff, you're like, okay, I want some greasy food. And I wasn't exercising because I felt like crap because I was drinking the night before and I was not exercising. So once I got into all this stuff, I got into like, I woke up this morning, I went for a walk and a run with my dogs. I do that every morning now. I found that so important just to get moving in the morning. Then afterwards, I actually have a home gym. I went to the home gym. Then I did all my herbs and stuff, which is literally just like hundreds of bottles here of herbs and stuff from Dr. Morris, if anyone's interested. I really like that stuff. And then I did my coffee enema, which I really like. It really cleans out your system, really cleans your blood, actually. Then I do outside here, I do yoga in the sun with coconut oil all over me and meditate. And the meditation's amazing. So like this literally goes on and on. Like I do 4 to 6 hours a day of this sort of stuff, which if you would have told me like 3 years ago or 2 years ago that I'd be able to do that, I'd be like, well, how could I possibly ever get any work done? It's like, no, I am so full of energy now that I can get more done in an hour than what I used to be get done in a day, because my mind is so clean. Like, everything's so clean. I'm just flowing. The creativity is bubbling. And because of that, I've also got like my team around me, right? Which you can build up. And you brought that up earlier. You're pushing people away in the past. And now I'm able to have people in my life again. So I've got my assistant, I've got people work for me. And I'm like, bam, bam, do this, do that, do this. I'm just like a machine now. And I can still do my 6 hours a day. And one last thing to finish this with is, like, a lot of people say, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. You know, if I didn't do it, I'd feel really bad. Like, I don't, like, what a bad day. I didn't get to do all my stuff. Like, I love that stuff so much. If I don't do it, it's like a, it's a bad day. So, it took me 2 years total of all this stuff to get to this point, but I'm finally at this point, and it's, I got to tell everyone, it's freaking amazing. I love my life. I feel so grateful. I never thought I would ever be here. Whenever I heard people, when a couple years ago say things like, oh, I love my life and I'm so grateful, I'd be like, what are you so grateful about? What's so great about life? I didn't understand. But you can get yourself to this point over, you know, a lot of hard work, but it's so 100% worth it. And once you get to this sort of point, it's like, the sky's the limit. The world is your oyster. That projector starts just making the most beautiful movies every day almost. Not that I don't have bad days, but like, most days are just unbelievable. And even when I have bad days, I kind of enjoy them now. It's like, oh, well, it's probably meant to happen for a reason. I must have had something, sort of some energy off there. Or maybe it just happened totally, completely by accident or coincidence or whatever happened. But, you know, I'm okay with it. Everything's okay now. And it sort of brings back to what you started with, where the sort of movement of everything's okay. I kind of push that away too. I'm like, well, everything isn't okay. But, you know, it's sort of like the two things you talked about earlier. It's like, being okay with how you are, but continuing to improve yourself, continue to work on yourself, continue to want to change the world, but not necessarily getting wrapped up again in the end results. So if everything I do right now and everything I've been doing and everything I do for the next 10 years doesn't really end up improving the world dramatically or not, anything like that, well, I did my best. I gave it a shot. I tried, you know, like, I can't get too wrapped up in the end result either, which is what a lot of other anarchists/voluntarists will say is, well, I don't see any hope for it ever happening in our lifetime, so why even bother, right? Which I think is not a good way to go about it.
But there's some other kind of appeal that I think I was at least partly attracted to for a while, that it kicks the can down the road. Like, there's not going to be any change in my life, so I'm just going to keep kind of talking about this stuff and shaming people who believe something else, and I can die without ever seeing the proof of the merits of these ideas. But that's not true at all. I mean, I can try to live this more and more in my life, you know, in my career, in my relationships, in, you know, my ability to travel. I mean, one of the things that really my friend Thaddeus Russell, who you might be familiar with, he proposed this idea to me when we started planning the LA event. And I said, no, that's not a good idea. And then I went away with family in August, and we were up at a beach house. I was just watching how other people live and the lack of freedom that they have in their own lives because of their job or because of the family. And there isn't something that makes you a slave if you have a job or a family, but it's like how you manage those things. And I was watching people who didn't do a very good job of managing those things. And I was listening to people kind of run around and be frantic and not have a good time on vacation as I just sat by myself on a screened-in porch. And I said, you know, if I wanted to, I could just get in my car and go to Florida right now. There's nothing that stops me. I created this freedom for myself in my lifestyle. Why wouldn't I take advantage of it? I did want to ask you, you know, as you went through all of the things that you feel are really helping you right now, do you see one action as a kind of cornerstone habit, like something that holds everything else together? I remember Tim Ferriss said, I get up in the morning, I make my bed. You know, and I don't remember him explaining why, but the more I thought about it, it's like, okay, here's a small victory over a chaotic situation that, you know, builds momentum towards the next task, right? But is there one of these things that you're doing that you really feel helps hold everything else together?
Well, I have a maid who makes my bed every day, so that's rather nice. But, you know, I can't think of any one cornerstone thing. I think it's everything. That's sort of, you know, it's taken me a while. Like, no one could ever, you know, if you're out there and you're like, I want to do exactly what Jeff does every day, I've never done any of these things, I think it'd be pretty much impossible, because you have to get, it takes time and You get accustomed to doing these things and all these sort of things. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's any one thing that really is a cornerstone. I think it's all of it. Like I've pushed to a level now where like it's just like getting so much better and better all the time that, you know, I'll give you an example. Like today I didn't do my yoga and meditation because we just at the last minute sort of decided to do this interview and I wanted to do it earlier in the day. So because of that, I was like, okay. And you know, I could have done it. I could have rushed my way through it. I was like, that's fine. I don't have to do these things every day. But I'm doing so many things that it all just really adds up. I think one of the things that I've sort of learned a little bit is just do things, right? Like, so many people just never even try to do anything. And I think they're so scared or they don't think they can achieve anything or they don't think they're good enough to achieve something or whatever it is. I'm just guessing on why they're doing those things. But I've always found in life, like just do something. And what you find is whatever you do will give you some sort of education. You're talking about the School Sucks podcast here. This is the best education is life, right? And so every single thing I've done, whether it's the ayahuasca, whether it's the meditation, whatever, the hundreds of other things I've done, they've all been a learning experience in one way or another. They're never what you think they're going to be. You always learn about yourself by doing them. So even if it turns out to be kind of like something that didn't help you, whatever it is, like, you know, whatever it is, you actually, it did help you because you learned that. Now you know that, and now you've learned something about yourself. And now when you try something else, you'll have some new experience and you have some past experience about it and things like that. So that's what I see a lot with a lot of people out there is they kind of have this defeatist mindset and they don't think, and it looks so like if you're just sitting there and you're way behind, you're where I was 3 years ago and you're listening to this, it sounds like there's no way I could do all that stuff. That's right. There's no way you could do all that stuff right now. That's why you just start with one or two, pick a couple of things. And like you said, like the morning walks is so important. It's amazing to me just how little things, and a lot of these things are very simple. Like, you know, and a lot of these things are kind of like in our day-to-day sort of culture, like eat an apple a day to keep the doctor away. That's totally true. like the eating some fruit every day is really necessary for your health. Going for, you know, basic exercise is so necessary. And it's not just your physical health, like I said, because that improves your mental, which then connects you more to this raising of energy and consciousness that you feel this sort of like connection with the world. And then everything starts flowing. But it all starts with getting up in the morning, going for a walk, eating an apple. So if you just want to get started, I would just start with that and then just start just trying to do more and more over time. And if you fall back, don't beat yourself up over it and just keep going.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's important with even just these basic lifestyle changes or the more serious things like drinking. Shame is a really powerful self-destructive kind of, you know, weapon. People almost use, I mean, we see how the culture uses it, right? All these examples, you see how it's used politically. You see how libertarians have tried to wield it themselves, right? But that internalization of shame is so destructive. So whether it's just like, oh, I really, you know, ate shit today, acknowledging that, accepting that, and taking the responsibility to do better in the future. Like you talked about, you know, these backslides, they're learning experiences too. And once you understand that this is not the end of the world, and that was that kind of AA thinking about drinking that I originally had in my head that like, I would just binge drink because it's like, well, I already screwed up this much. You know, I already probably lost this or that or screwed up this or that. That kind of thinking isn't really a part of my psyche anymore. But I totally agree with what you're saying. And actually, the reason why I asked you the question about the cornerstone habit was I've seen some of your videos where you walk and I say, that guy's going to have a good day. Right. It's beautiful where you are, obviously. But just getting up and moving, you know, our bodies are made to do that. And it's such an important thing to do first thing in the morning. And, you know, for me, even if I can't get in, you know, the 10,000 steps a day that I try to do every day, having
I got my Fitbit watch here. I'm at, you can see it, 5,600, yep. And I got to go for my walk later. So I tried to do that 10,000. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a 45-minute walk a day. You can even break it up into two sessions. That, in addition to the normal walking you do, will get most people pretty close to that. And, you know, 10,000 is like a higher goal. 8,000 is perfectly sufficient if you're walking 2,000 steps a day. I mean, when I first got it, or I think I first started tracking it on my phone, and I was like, oh my God, I walked 1,700 steps. And, you know, I think I'm in shape because I go to the gym. And that's, I think that's a really important thing to do too, but just moving more, like moving every hour. I have an alarm that goes off when there's 10 minutes left in the hour and I just get up, drink water, walk around. I find that's like the lifestyle balance is really important as well. But being able to build off of that into some kind of exercise routine, that is like, you know, the number one thing for me. If that slips, I really find that it affects my frame of mind, my motivation. So I really try to stay consistent with that. It's going to be a trick to do it on the road, but I'm bringing a kettlebell. And I guess if I have to pull over at a rest stop somewhere and do it, I'll do it and maybe make a video about it.
It's like I said, with the physical is the base. What I've learned. So like you said, if you let the physical go and you're eating crappy or you're not exercising, then the mental starts to get kind of hazy. Now all of a sudden the mental's hazy. Now all of a sudden your energy is coming down. So it really does start with the physical. And it's interesting. I was so happy to have Ron Paul on Entercast just recently. And he's in his 70s and he was full of energy. He was like the nicest guy I've ever met of his sort of stature, like by far, no one even comes close. It was like talking to you like this nice old grandfather, but he's still full of energy too. Mm-hmm. And like, he was like, yeah, I just finished another interview. I've got this one. I'm like, how do you, I think I asked him on Entercast, I said, how do you have all this energy? And he basically just said, oh, I just go for bike rides every day and eat, you know, good food. It's that simple really, like at the basis level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just think about what goes through your mind. I mean, you know, the body carries the mind, right? And if your mind is going, God, I'm just trapped inside this thing that smells like whiskey and French fries, you know, how are you going to feel good? So it's a long process beyond the physical, but that is really the cornerstone for me. That is really the foundation. That's it, to take care of myself the best I can physically.
Yes, that old saying, the body is your temple, right?
Right,
and
right.
I used to hear that a lot. And, you know, I've actually done exercise off and on throughout my life. So it's not like I've been, you know, the guy who's never been in the gym.
You were like a bodybuilder, weren't you?
Yeah, I've done lots of stuff and lots of sports. I was a hockey player, boxer, all kinds of stuff. So it's not like I haven't done this before, but I think over time, I kind of forgot about the importance. And then as your mind starts to kind of get foggy, as you're getting worse and worse over time, to me, that's why I try to, you know, say that in my videos and stuff, just try to remind people, because some people just kind of forget. And once you can get the physical good, then you can get the mental good, as we pointed out. So it really does start with the physical for a lot of people. And it doesn't have to be anything hard. Like you pointed out, just go for a little walk. How hard is that? And I do remember when I first started walking in the mornings, it was about a year and something ago. And it was kind of hard, you know, like, cause I just wasn't used to it. It's just like anything. If you're not used to it, the first few days seems like it's a bit of a chore, because, oh, it's not that easy to walk up these hills and I'm breathing hard. I don't like this feeling. I'd rather be in bed, blah, blah, blah. But after a few days, that's basically all it is. And no more than a couple of weeks, you're pretty much just accustomed to it. And then if you don't do it, then you feel bad.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to start the day, you know, before coffee or anything like that, to just get out. I mean, even if it's 15 minutes, it makes a big difference. You got out and you did it. The only other thing I wanted to ask you about was how Anarcho Poco is coming and how your frame of mind is different about that than it's been in years past. I mean, everyone I've ever talked to has always, you know, said they were glad they went and it was successful. But how is your approach to the event different this year than it was in years past?
The very first Anarcho Poco, I was pretty much drunk through the entire thing. I was going through a complete business collapse, failure of numerous businesses. I got defrauded. I was basically bankrupt. And it was just sort of like this, like, shot in the dark sort of a thing with Anarcho Poco. And being an entrepreneur, I've done this many times, so it wasn't that hard for me. But it was like, well, let's put up a website, let's call it Anarcho Poco, let's see if anyone wants to come, maybe this will make a couple bucks and I'll kind of like survive through. And it actually was a success, you know, about 100 and some odd people showed up the first year. We're expecting maybe 1,000 in 2018, so it's really grown. This is going to be our fourth year coming up. And then the next year, actually, I had dengue fever hit me right on the very first day. So I couldn't go to much of the conference. I was really kind of a wreck. And sort of interesting time. So I actually wasn't drinking at the time. That was after I had done the Iboga. But it's kind of funny because the dengue fever and another thing I got chikungunya and dengue fever all within a couple months. And that kind of got me back into my old sort of depression quite a bit, because I was in bed a lot and I wasn't moving. And then it just sort of like started this thing. So that was my second year. That was not terribly great either. Then last year, I was like, okay, I've got this alcohol thing mostly under control, but I didn't. And I started drinking way too much at the conference, and I missed, you know, well more than half the conference. By the end of it, I was locked in my room. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I was depressed. And so last year wasn't great for me either. So I'm really looking forward to this year, because I just know, like, I know, like, I'm over all that stuff now. Like, there's always, you know, a risk of, you know, falling back or whatever, but I'm just so beyond all that. I've been on numerous trips now. I just stick to my routine, basically, and I love my routine, so there's no chance of me really falling off it now, unless something really strange happens. Like, I'm really excited you're coming, and it's kind of funny that we've had very similar pasts, and that we're both coming out of our problems at the same time. So you're going on your School Sucks Across America tour. That's very similar to what I said with my last trip. It was my first completely successful trip in not having any depression, not drinking too much, not falling out of any of my routines. Everything went as well as I could possibly hope for. So that was my first super successful trip, and you're just about to go on yours too. So we're on very similar sort of wavelengths. And now you're hopefully coming to Anarchapulco in February as well, for your first Anarchapulco. So maybe we can both, you know, really celebrate that we both made it to that point and are back on a good path, and now we can continue on with our work together.
Yeah, absolutely. I would look forward to that. You know, I stopped drinking in 2015, kind of in a very final way for me, and everybody's, you know, destination with that is different. And I'm really not into the prescriptive, like, this is how you have to do it, or you can't do this, or you should do that. That's what's best for me. And I think what's happening for me right now is I'm looking to basically reward myself for those efforts. Like I said, I wouldn't have tried to do something like this 5 years ago. This is a pretty major undertaking, and I know there's going to be a lot of challenges. Like, I know my stress level is going to go up. I'm an introvert. I'm going to come face to face with 250 new people in a fairly intimate way, not like passing people in the mall over the next 40 days. And, you know, there's even going to be people who say, hey, man, you know, let me buy you a beer. And, you know, with a heightened level of stress, and I'm going to go, oh, well, I know how that goes, but I don't want to go back down that route for me anyway, in any way. So what I've been doing is trying to mentally prepare this kind of like stoic approach to, okay, well, this could happen and that would suck. So what would you do in this situation? Just so I don't get blindsided. Because in the past, like, you know, I always had some sob story, like, oh, I ate a pizza because I didn't know there was going to be pizza at the place, you know, like how that always happens. And the same is true with booze. And the same is true with other types of temptations, women. You know, I have plenty of stories related to that as well. So I just try to say, like, look at the lay of the land that's in front of me, examine the terrain, calculate the best I can what the challenges might be, and plan accordingly and hope for the best. But to prepare myself mentally for what I'm about to do. And I know it's like, some people are like, dude, you're driving across the country, but I've never done anything like this before. You know, by myself with like so many things scheduled along the way. So I do feel like it's a big challenge. Maybe like the first week into it, I'll be like, oh, I don't know what I was worried about. The point I was trying to make is I've done a lot of work to get to a place where this is possible in my life. And I really want to, instead of being stressed out about it, or, you know, upset that I have too many emails in my inbox, I really want to be grateful. Which is another one of those really foundational things about, you know, healing and being better and doing better. And the morning walk is a great time for that, right? To just appreciate what you have or what you earned. But to feel that gratitude, I think, is a really, really important thing for keeping that, you know, upward path going.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because that was the last step that I took that put me to this new level that is so far beyond anything I even thought was possible. It was about a month or two ago, I met someone, and they really got it through to me that, because I've heard it before, oh, just be grateful, have gratitude. And, you know, in the past, in my depressive state, I'd be like, yeah, like, I'm just going to be grateful and now everything's going to be great. You know, like, it just seemed like, you know, whatever, you know, you hear all these things. But someone got it across to me in the right way about a month or two ago, and I started sort of practicing it. I'd wake up in the morning, and Well, there's my dog, Lucy. Oh, I love her so much. Yeah, how lucky am I to have, you know, she's so special. And then Bruce, oh, Bruce, you're so, I love you, Bruce. You know, and then, you know, this, just do this over like a few weeks, really. And then just starts becoming more and more of my life, where actually still to this day, like I, as soon as I walk out this window after this interview, I'll go, what a beautiful day. This, I'm so lucky, you know? And it's actually just been like massive change in my life. Like I said, I feel like I'm on ecstasy right now. I feel like I've been on ecstasy for the last week or two. I'm wondering if this is ever going to end. But I have no idea, but like I'm at this level of, and a big part of it, that last step was that gratitude. And I think I did a video on it on my channel where I talked about being the richest man in the world and never even knowing it. Was that moment when I realized that. And so basically I had, like a lot of people can look at my life and go, man, he's got everything. He's got a beautiful family, a beautiful wife, amazing dogs, lives in a beautiful place. He kind of can do whatever he wants because of how he structured his businesses and stuff like that. I never realized it. It was like this thing that's, you know, and so like not a lot's changed in my life as far as the physical things all around me. But now I appreciate them. And that has just affected so much of my own personal sort of mood or energy, is just appreciating it. And again, Luke Radowski, We Are Changed, told me that. He said, write down 5 things you're grateful for every night before you go to bed. And I was like, whatever. Like, I'm going to wake up the next morning and, oh, my life's going to be great. I just didn't get it. And I still don't even know how to explain it. I don't know why that changed my life so much. Maybe God, creator, whatever, the universe, when you are grateful for things, it wants to give you more things or something. I don't know. I don't know how it all works, but I know it works, or it did work in that case.
Yeah. Again, I think that's, it's feeding something better into the projector. Mm. You're giving yourself a richer collection of stuff to project by remembering the things that are already good. And when you do that, and when you really are, you know, paying attention to that, you'll find more of those things, because that's where your focus is being directed. And now, because of that, I mean, look, the blinds are open, right?
So yeah, they totally are. It's you know, just been night and day difference in everything. So I'm so glad that you're kind of getting there. I can give you some advice, because I remember feeling exactly how you feel right now with your trip, because I was looking at a few trips going, you can even watch some of my old walk and talks a month or two ago, where I was like, I don't know, I hope I can do it on this trip. And then I come back, I'm like, I didn't, I fell back. And so I remember all the anxiety about it. And I remember the worry. And the only thing I can tell you is, don't try not to too much. You're gonna definitely do it, because it's something that's new to you. You're not sure yet. You've never really done this before, right? It's just like anything, like skydiving or bungee jumping. The first time you do it, it's like, oh, this is like, you know, something you got to think about, worry about a little bit. And you're definitely going to worry, but try as much as possible not to, because that, again, is going to bring down your state a little bit. And there really isn't much to worry about, because if you truly have this intention, and this is what I said 2 months ago in my talk. So I was like, I will go on a trip soon. It might not be this one. I don't know when it's going to be, but there will happen. I have this intention. I am putting this out into the universe. I want to be able to travel without getting really drunk and getting really depressed. And I've done it now. And it's because of the intention. So just as much as possible, try not to worry about it. But you're obviously going to still have some lurking worries and things like that. But I think as soon as you get on the road, you'll start to see that a lot of those worries were unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was talking to Thaddeus about it a couple weeks ago, you know, because we're putting together this event in LA. And, you know, he really encouraged me to do this. He's done it before. And, you know, I was talking about some of that anxiety that I was feeling. And I said, you know what? What's the worst thing that's going to happen on this trip is that I'm going to die. And that I'm going to die, what, traveling across the country to meet people who were positively influenced by the work I did over the last decade. So not the worst way to, it's not getting eaten by sharks, you know, and that's fine. So, you know, I put that thought in my mind. Here's the worst thing that can happen. And I figured out how to put a nice positive spin on it, you know, for the obituary. And that's it. You know, I try to cast those worries aside. I'm accepting of the fact that some anxiety will probably come over me driving through Detroit or New York City or, you know, all the other kinds of scenes that we don't have to worry about here in New Hampshire. But I feel ready for it as I can be. And, you know, the parts that I'm not ready for, I'm fine. I'll be ready for them after I do them the next time they happen. So
have you ever gotten into meditation?
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually gotten out of it a little bit, and it's something that I've been meaning to return to, but I still think that that really helped me. I was doing it for, you know, every morning for over 2 years. And, you know, I started just doing, you know, 5 minutes a day, focusing on my breath. I had this guy, Kyle Davis, come on my show, who's a meditation teacher. And he, you know, he did a show with me, just giving me the basics. He came back like 6 or 8 months later to kind of help me go to the next step. But I even developed ways to do it while I was walking, you know, like walking meditation, as long as you have a quiet kind of place. And just really like, you know, being focused on breath. It's an easy thing to get back into. And you don't even have to call it meditation or do it for 20 minutes. Sit somewhere quiet when you get up in the morning and just focus on your breathing. Breathe deep and focus on it going in and out for 5 minutes. And, you know, as a, I forget who I heard say this once, but like the working out of meditation is you're focusing on your breath, and the rep is some intrusive thought comes in and you push it away, you know, and that's one rep in meditation. And as they come, you just let them come and you move them away and you return your focus to your breath. And I thought it was, I originally got into it because I thought it was going to help deal with like anxiety, but I actually found that it really improved my focus. I was wandering into my Facebook newsfeed a lot less when I was meditating like 10 minutes a day every morning.
Yeah, that stuff just doesn't matter as much when you're in a more peaceful sort of state of mind. That's what I've definitely found. And yeah, I just wanted to bring up meditation because, you know, when you're if you're feeling some anxiety along your trip, just pull over, do a couple minutes of meditation and, you know, just get that recentered sort of balance sort of a thing. I've found that really helps. That's one of the things I've kind of learned about myself, too. I was actually at a party in Monaco at a bunch of Bitcoiners had a villa there. It was really nice to have this big party. And I'd go upstairs, all the music be on, all the people be talking, there'd be drinks. I actually had some drinks. And I'm not recommending to anyone who has issues with alcohol to try to have a couple drinks or whatever. But for some reason, I've managed to just completely get this owned right now. We'll see what happens in the future. But I just think I just like don't care. Like it doesn't have any effect on me anymore. But anyway, I'd go up. And what I found was I actually had a bedroom in this house. So I'd go up for like 20 minutes, talk to people, have a couple drinks. And I'd want to kind of have the drinks kind of like to... I'm not comfortable in those situations, you know, the loudness, the music, the people, all that kind of stuff. It just kind of like, it's really just affects me a lot. And what I do is I go down to my room like every 20 minutes or so and just for like 5-10 minutes and just relax. And like, that was so much better than even having the drink was. So, like, it was just, you know, just getting yourself sort of, you know, and these are, it's so funny, right? Because like, society doesn't teach us any of this stuff that we've been talking about, right? Like, you know, you're not going to get this information. What you're going to get is, oh, you're feeling, you know, anxiety, have a beer, right? That's what
they're
going to
tell you. Absolutely. Right. And see, I mean, that's the thing. It was interesting what you said about, I want to learn more about like ibogaine and ayahuasca, because it kind of goes against something that I've always said and thought is that like, you know, people talk, they say, oh, if I just had $10,000 or I just need a drink, you know, things like that. And what I found is that money, alcohol, hallucinogens, and I guess we could add social media to that now. They are not things that are going to turn you around, or they're not shortcuts or new paths. They're just accelerators on the road you're already on, right? So you became fabulously wealthy when you were young with all these personal problems, and it's probably just like hitting the gas.
Absolutely. The worst thing that can happen to anyone is to have success at a young age before you got all this stuff figured out. That's what happened to me. Yeah. I went through the next 20 years just doing stupid thing after stupid thing because I could.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Because I had the money to do it. And if I didn't, I probably would have stopped doing a lot of those stupid things a lot sooner. But as far as the, you call them the hallucinogens, I don't really call them that. I call them more psychedelics.
Right, right.
To me, they are incredibly powerful medicines if used completely as a medicine, right. Things like ayahuasca, boga, and all that. And they can really help with so many issues. And I'll just give you briefly my experience on ayahuasca. I've done it twice. And by the way, we'll be doing it again in Narcopoco. We have the best shaman in Mexico comes and does it. And he actually likes it because he sees us all as being light bringers to the world. And he's like, yeah, if we can fix all of the people's major, you know, the problems they've got, and they can get out there and shine that light better. So it's really cool like that. But my two experiences with ayahuasca is basically I did it. I saw some colors for a little bit. And then it was pitch black dark and I couldn't move. And I had to think about every single thing I've done in my life for what seemed like days, weeks, or months, even though it was only about 4 or 5 hours. And it was torturous self-analysis and psychoanalysis of myself. That's basically all it was. And it's something I wouldn't have done at that moment in time unless I was forced to do it. So that's what the plant really did for me in that situation. Was I was so frazzled and so screwed up and just basically a giant mess at the time that there's no way I would have just locked myself into a room and just like gone through every moment in my life and really thought about why that I do this and why did I do that and how does that affect me today and all that kind of stuff. But that's what the plant in my situation did. And actually the plant does different things for different people. A lot of people really believe in the power of it, believe that it actually knows what you need to do to get better. And it will, for some person, it might just be something simple. It might be something small. For me, it had to lock me down, tie me to the bed and make me actually consciously think about everything in my life for the first time in my life. And that's basically what it did. So yeah, they definitely have massive potential healing power. Absolutely. But just like anything, it's got sort of like some risks and it's got some good sides and bad sides. And you have to be a little bit careful. The one thing that I just always tell the people when they're thinking about doing psychedelics is you really should feel like you're drawn to it. Like, and that's exactly what happened to me. I was sitting somewhere around here. I was like, I got to change my life. How do I change it? I don't know how. I'm stuck. And then all of a sudden the word ayahuasca just kept popping up everywhere I looked. And I was like, oh, and I watched a video. I'm like, this is interesting. And just everywhere. And I felt drawn to it. And that's really what I say to people is if you hear it calling you, then be open to trying it. But if you don't feel it calling you, don't go and do it just for the heck of it. It's nothing. It's too serious of a thing, in my opinion, to just sort of play around with. But if you really feel like it's been calling you and it's been popping up in your life all over the place and you sense that that is something that you should try to do, then yeah, I would definitely look into it.
So you've talked about it being kind of like a catalyst that led to, you know, a lot of the changes and the growth that you've experienced since first doing it. But I think, you know, from what we've talked about today, there's this recognition that it's also a confluence of things. I think that, you know, school teaches us, and certainly, you know, culture and many aspects of media and even, you know, marketing and advertising, not that I'm against those things, but they speak to a schooled public. People seek easy answers because of the way that they're, finger quotes, educated. They don't want to do hard multi-step work. They want the kind of silver bullet. So recognition and the acceptance of this is a multi-step process. It requires a variety of tools. There's, you know, whatever problems you're having, there's probably a biological component to them. There could be, you know, a genetic aspect. It could be just related to how you're eating or how you're treating yourself. There could definitely be a behavioral aspect to it, which is related to that one. The things you're doing are leading to certain types of thoughts. There's a psychodynamic aspect to it, your history, the traumas you've endured in your life. And all of those things, if you're trying to solve a problem like depression or substance abuse, you have to approach that problem, you know, across all of those theaters, right? And you have to be willing to look at all of those things. There isn't a book or a pill or, you know, anything like that. But then, you know, once you start doing that work, you really do, as you've kind of demonstrated here, your attention goes outward and you start to say, okay, what else can help me do better, right? And it just kind of builds into this collection of things that are, you know, life-serving and life-affirming, and that's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah, and it all starts with just starting with something, right? That's what we talked about earlier. So you just start with the walk, I got into intermittent fasting. That's another thing that's really changed me a lot. That's actually when I quit smoking. When your body gets so cleaned out, all of a sudden you can hear what it wants because you can't hear it. All the noise of life and all the crap you're putting in your body and you're drinking, which numbs you, and then you can't think. And you're basically just, most people are just kind of like this mess. Once you get it all cleaned out, your body just goes, I just want to go for a walk and eat some fruit. And yep. You're like, and it's like, why are you smoking these cigarettes all the time? It's fucking not helping us at all. We've been talking for a while. Of course, we're both very passionate about this topic, obviously, but I actually have other things to do. I'm sure you do as well.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely.
But just it's been a great talk. Yeah.
Until I leave. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a great talk. I definitely look forward to hopefully getting down there in February. And I'm hitting the road this Sunday. I'm headed to Keene, New Hampshire to launch from Free Talk Live on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've got, so if you want to, we'll have in links down below, schoolsucksproject.com/tour schedule, starting if these numbers are right, looks like October 15th in New Hampshire, moving on through Philadelphia, York, Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, it just goes on and on, all the Midwest, Kansas City, Wichita, Boulder, Denver, then it gets a lot in California in November as well. So if you're along those way and you're interested in that kind of stuff, maybe you can connect with Brett along the way. And as you mentioned, he'll be speaking at Anarcha Boca, first time 2018. And really looking forward to that. We've got so many great new speakers coming this year. I actually can't announce the latest one, but it's someone I'm super excited about. It'll be announced in the next couple of days. So it's going to be amazing. We'll play the trailer for Anarcha Boca after this. And is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we go, Brett?
No, that's it. I said to you when we were talking earlier, like Anarcha Boca is probably going to be mostly a vacation for me. I know you really wanted me to do the seminar, which is something that I'm open to doing at some point in the future. I know Anarcha Boca is probably not going anywhere. So, you know, I have been trying to challenge myself to design a course. And the more I get, you know, my hands around that, the more I think I'd be open to doing like public presentations like that in the future. But no, I'm excited about the opportunity to get down there. I know it's beautiful. I've seriously only ever heard good things about the event. You know, I've never heard a complaint from anyone who's gone. I've gotten a lot of encouragement to go from you and from other people. And even though I would view it like coming up this February after this tour, throughout October and November, I would view it more as a vacation. I'd be happy to get up on stage and certainly be very visible. And I would love to record some podcasts while I'm there as well. So hopefully we can make that work. And I appreciate you helping me you know, share the message about this tour, Jeff.
Yeah, and one thing I should mention about Anarcha Boca is before it, and we haven't even announced this yet, there's so many things going on, it's going to be so massive this year, is for 4 days before Anarcha Boca, so like February 11th to 15th, we're going to have a complete sort of wellness sort of a retreat, which will be all kinds of stuff, meditation. We want everyone to come down, get really sort of like healthy, because the conference is 4 full days, and as you'll see, Brett, and that probably give you a little anxiety, you're just so many people and you're talking so much because you're so interested, because all the same people have all the very similar sort of mindset, and it's very rare we can all get together in one place.
Yeah, I'm excited about the next, let's say, 5 months in my life and yours, Jeff. So thanks again.